Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Then I'm going to go top off McCoff.
Top off McCoff.
Go visit General Top off McCoff. And
that is like the new, you know what? I hate that we need to figure out a way to send this bit to the masses. Top off my cough.
That's simply too good.
Yeah. It could be its own Discord channel. Top off McCoff.
Mr. Top off McCoff.
It is a pleasure to see you again. Thank you for frequenting our casino.
Ah, Mr. Bond. General Tokopnikov.
You're a very observant man, Mr. Bond. But not observant enough to avoid the trap in the lair hidden in this volcano.
I love a complimentary villain.
Mm-hmm. You are a difficult man to find, Mr. Bond.
I will tell you, Mr. Bond. Not the easiest man to track down. But that smile...
I will admit, I did not expect your charms to work on my woman.
Mr. Bond, you are clearly a man of fine taste. Tell me, where did you get your wristwatch?
I love the guy, the villain who just kind of falls in love with him just for his general style.
Tell me, Mr. Bond, where would a gentleman like yourself find yourself on a Thursday evening?
The Huntsman.
Oh, the Huntsman.
Out of paper, out of stock. There's friendly faces around the block. Break loose from the chains that are causing you pain. Call Michael and Stanley, Jim and Dwight Creed. Call Andy and Kelly for your business paper needs. Or Dunder Mifflin, the people purses paper people. Dunder Mifflin, the people purses paper people. Dunder Mifflin, the people purses paper people.
Hello and welcome to the Michael Scott Podcast Company, a show for fans of The Office by fans of The Office. I'm your host and worm guy, Sean Roney.
And I'm Edwin James, and I'm simple and sweet like a lady baker.
And with us, as always, our producer in the warehouse, Mr. Alex Ward.
The hospital will provide dictionaries. Bring a thesaurus.
Every week we get together and talk about our favorite show, NBC's The Office. This week we'll be covering the season finales. That's the finale from each season. Mm. And then we'll head to the conference room where we have some additional voicemails that we'd like to play now that Edwin is back.
Yes.
Yeah.
Welcome back, Edwin.
Thank you. How was Vietnam?
Vietnam was great. I really, really like it there. Yeah, it's a very cool place to visit. Weather is very different than it is here in Switzerland. Went from very warm to very, very snowy.
You don't say.
Yeah. But yeah, no, Vietnam's cool. The food is amazing. The people are really nice. So yeah, it's always a good trip when I get to go.
Nice.
Well, welcome back. Typically this is where I ask Alex if we have any housekeeping, but Edwin and Alex decided before the episode that they would switch roles. So here we go. Edwin. Do we have any housekeeping this week?
Do we? Yes, we do. You can join our Patreon. That's $5 a month, and that gets you ad-free episodes. That gets you bonus episodes. It gets you our once-a-month monthly mailbag where you can ask us questions, and we respond to them all. It helps us support the Thurgood Marshall College Fund. We make a donation to them. And then also, join the Patreon. Helps us. Helps support the show. Please join our Discord. You can interact with us and other fans and members of our community. The Discord link is available in our bio, the Instagram bio, and in the show notes. And more broadly than that, you can email us, write us, mspodcastcompany@gmail.com. And then check out the merch store, mspcstore.com. grab some gifts for this holiday season. And I think that wraps up this week's episode of Housekeeping.
That was so much more efficient than how I do it.
He's showing off.
Yeah.
Thank you, Edwin. Yes, the Patreon. It's a great way to support the show if you like the show. So check us out on there.
Rate and review the show on iTunes, wherever you get your podcasts.
It just helps us. The Discord, by the way. Discord's a lot of fun. Yeah. Fun stuff happening.
It is. Some Toast Talk. I am excited about Toast Talk because I'll just give a little teaser that we have an advent calendar of different jams and jellies.
Oh.
Your shelves are overflowing with preserves.
So I think I'm going to start doing a daily update in Toast Talk for that.
Oh, man. Mm-hmm. Jam or jelly of the day? With Sean?
You should show. Do a jam. Oh, you know what you need to do? Jam and jelly of the day. So every day you show the toast with the jelly, and then you put a song as well.
Oh, nice. Oh, ooh. God. That is such a good idea. Mm-hmm. Okay, cool. I'm going to start
that later.
It is the
advent of good ideas.
Yeah. Wow.
A good idea is a good idea forever.
Very good. Well, let's get into the meat of today's episode, which are the season finales. Alex,
what's up?
Why are we doing this?
This was it began as a suggestion from a listener. I don't have the name in front of me, and I don't have the method with which it was suggested, but I believe it was through a Discord message of some kind. Anyway, we had I believe we've done an episode on openers, we've done episodes on like themes throughout the show, and we've never done one on season finales. We've we've definitely done Casino Night, we've done Hot Girl, we've done several of these individual episodes, but thematically we want to discuss how seasons tend to wrap up over the course of the show. What sort of common things do we see throughout the nine? How do they evolve? How do they change? It's very good representation of what the show's trying to say, I think, is in season finales, because you're wrapping up, you know, a whole season. You are tying up character stories. You are teasing the next one. Decisions have to be made in season finales. So we want to sort of just look at, from a broader lens, what sort of things do we see throughout the nine seasons? And I believe we're going to hold on the series finale, i.e., the finale in season nine. I think that deserves its own separate discussions.
Yeah,
sort of. So we're going to go course. 1 through 8. Probably not get into season 1 and 2 that much, other than broad strokes, just because we've done individual episodes. Even though there's some tantalizing stuff, especially in Casino Night. But yeah, let's look at how the show ends its chapters, shall we?
Yeah, I think we shall. just like broadly speaking, I think looking through the list of season finales, some of these stand out and some of them don't. Just real quick, I'll run the list. It's season 1, you got Hot Girls, season 2, Casino Night.
Hot Girl.
Hot Girl. I did write down Hot Girls, my bad. Season 1, Hot Girl. Season 2, Casino Night. Season 3, The Job, parts 1 and 2. Season 4, Goodbye Toby. Season 5, Company Picnic. Season 6, Whistleblower. Season 7, Search Committee. And season 8, Free Family Portrait Studio. Of course, season 9 has the finale. Just off the top, I feel like, you know, Casino Night, Goodbye Toby, Company Picnic, and Search Committee, those actually feel like season finales to me, and I kind of forget about the other ones being actually season endings.
Yeah.
Speaking of forgetting about things, we've also done individual episodes about Goodbye Toby and the Search Committee.
Great.
You know.
Great. So we don't want to exclude anything outside of maybe the final, the finale, which I understand could be a its own episode and deserves a very, very deep dive. But I think we can talk about them as a whole. Or we can talk about them in individually. They have a very distinct feel and experience watching the season finales. Actually, watching a few of them back to back, you get kind of a sense of like everything in a season coming to a head in these episodes, like a lot of seasons long tension finally getting resolved or either or pushed out. These episodes just usually build to something really dramatic. Whether it's the job interview in New York or Dunder Mifflin Air or who's going to become the next manager. There's always something that comes out of these season finales.
And there has to be a sort of, not cliffhanger, but there's like, they always have to leave a breadcrumb for what's next outside of season nine, right? And I'm excited to talk about how they, what the differences are in those, how those evolve as the show progresses, I think is really interesting. You know, starting from Hot Girl, going all the way to, you know, in Free Family Portrait Studio, and you look at like the things that are being teased are much different, and they become much more, I don't know, grounded in more adult real life than just TV show drama. And I like that.
I don't know but about this, but maybe a fun place to start is the breadcrumbs, is the cliffhangers, like, because I think that's interesting, because there are some seasons that give you a big one, and there are some seasons where there's kind of barely one at all.
Breadcrumbs, I think this counts as toast talk.
That's right.
There you go.
Backdoor toast talk.
Double toast talk this week. Hot Girl, the breadcrumb is kind of just that Pam is unhappy, maybe. You know, see a little bit of.
Oh, I would say the main is that Jim asks Katie out. Like, Jim gives up on Pam for, like, all the way. Because Roy comes back, you know, tickles Pam. They have their little, like, thing in front of Jim at the very end of that episode. Yeah. And Jim basically walks in and asks Katie out. And it's sort of like, that's. The cliffhanger is like, no, don't let her go, Jim. Mm-hmm. That's what it felt like to me.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree. And I think that's, there isn't like a, it doesn't feel like a real season finale, because it doesn't like lead one-to-one into the next episode the way the Casino Night does, for example.
Yes.
But it does represent a little bit of a change. Like, it does kind of feel like that season just sort of ends after a series of six episodes.
Like, they're concerned with survival at that point, not continuing the story. I think they're just like, can we stay alive here?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But it does like represent a change that Jim, who has kind of been pining after Pam for the whole season, does ask out Katie. That does represent like, all right, the show is going to go and could go in a different direction. I also think it's worth pointing out that the other breadcrumbs from this episode come from all of Michael's fillet of fishes in his car. Yes.
And the espresso machine purchase.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Blue is not a flavor.
Ooh. Blue blast.
Yeah. That's over several months. Still.
I would like that in the passenger cup holder.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. Like, if that's the cliffhanger, just Jim is maybe going to try and move on. It's an interesting. I don't know if that was necessarily what kept people coming back, right?
Agreed.
But what you get in season two is a much more blatant cliffhanger, and perhaps the biggest one out of all of these, which is Casino Night, Jim kissing Pam, I can't remember, because we kind of get, you know, we fill in the rest of this scene when season three comes back, but I mean, does she tell him like no at the end of Casino Night?
No, it ends with a kiss.
It just ends with the kiss. Yeah, that might be the biggest bombshell out of all of these. Probably their most successful cliffhanger too. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say they're it's funny looking at the first seasons 1 through 5. The season finales, there's a Jim and Pam component to every season finale, right? I'd say it kind of stops a little bit with Whistleblower. When you read the list of season finales, Whistleblower was the one that I was like, what?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, right. And I'm like, what's the finale? Like, I remember that episode, but I don't think of it as a season finale. And it's funny because I think that's the first one where there's not really a direct, like, Jim and Pam wrap up, and or really a Michael one, which is, this is the really funny part. Seasons 1 through 5, there is a Jim and Pam resolution at the end of everyone, or a breadcrumb, and there's also like a bastardized version for Michael that happens at the end of every season as well. And they all have to do with romance, they all have to do with relationships, right? Because like, first one, you get Michael trying to, he's trying to date Katie, that just doesn't work. Like, and it starts very basic, which is like, you got turned down for a date, right? And then like, the second one is two queens on casino night, gonna drop a deuce on him. This is Michael's love triangle coming into focus. So he's gone from like first date to too many dates. You get to the job. I mean, that's when Jan is fired and is like, I'm committing to our relationship now 100%. And Michael's like, all right, it's now I'm in a committed relationship. Like he's on his own separate ride in these season finales. And then Jim and Pam are sort of the you know, the main current here. But it's just funny to think about that, even with, you know, going into Goodbye Toby, you know, Jan finds out Jan is pregnant, and then Company Picnic, you know, Holly comes back into the picture.
Yeah. But don't forget, at the end of Whistleblower, Joe says, if there's anything I can do for you, he's going to bring Holly back from Nashua.
That's probably the one time that Michael gets a big cliffhanger himself.
It turns there because Michael's resolution, you're right. That is like the main thing the viewer at this point in season six. That's the main storyline to tie up, right? Is like Michael's love life feels like the only thing left. And by the time Steve Carell leaves, that's sort of where it's dropped off.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, Dwight and Angela would be the other one then, but correct. And that like Jim and Pam by the end of season six, as far as not having their own sort of cliffhanger, they have had a lot happen with them in season six. They get married, they have their child. Mm-hmm. So like a lot has happened for them, and it does kind of, clear the runway a little bit for Michael to have a more dramatic romantic story that is set up or alluded to in this episode.
Yeah. And perhaps the most romantic cliffhanger with the biggest payoff is season eight, Fee Family Portrait Studio with Val and Daryl. That really, that really pays off in season nine.
Yep. I wish they'd done more with the Val character. I'll never get over it. Yeah. It's such a wasted opportunity.
It looking at the season eight, Free Family Portrait Studio. I think it's like Daryl. You get Daryl and Val holding hands, and I wonder what they like. Just seeing that as like a season finale cliffhanger. Like, I wonder if they genuinely were like, thinking in season nine, like Daryl will have, you know, a steady girlfriend in Val, and you know, maybe he'll have some relationship drama and stuff like that, and all that just got thrown out. The other thing that is brought up, I think, at the end,
Daryl,
of that episode is
so elegant.
Yeah, Nate and Daryl. That's the true
romance.
Shame,
yeah.
That
the card is more beautiful than the gloves.
The other romantic cliffhanger is probably the senator and Oscar at the end of that episode.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's right.
That becomes a big story point in season nine.
I guess. Go ahead, Edwin.
Don't forget Dwight and Angela and the baby. Operation Phoenix.
Right.
Of course.
They take the diaper and yes, they go out for the DNA test. And then that's resolved in beginning of season nine when comes back, not Dwight's, and he throws up the new power drink that he made of beet runoff, which looks a lot like blue Gatorade all over the hospital.
Why is it blue? Yeah.
Yeah. But it does. I mean, of course, obviously, we know that story wraps up differently. It doesn't end like that. But that is a cliffhanger of sorts, is that
they go.
Cabot Mose.
what do you think this says about this show from a larger sense, like that these season finales often, the anchor of all these season finales is some sort of either resolution or some sort of cliffhanger with a romantic relationship, you know, like, is it just that's the nature of TV, or is there anything larger you can kind of take about The Office, that the fact that is a common thing throughout all their season finales?
I think that what it kind of gets at is that the comedy aspect is what sort of brings people in, and what people maybe, but the thing that keeps you watching like week after week is you get invested in the story, you get invested in the characters and what happens to them. And you want to see, you know, good or bad, depending on like the character, let's say, you want to see what happens to them and what happens to their journey and if they have the happy ending and if they end up with the person that they want to end up with. And, you know, there are moments, I think, in the early seasons where The Office is, you know, it's supposed to emulate real life. It's supposed to emulate things that maybe feel impossible, at least from the romantic relationship part, when Jim goes to Stanford and when Holly goes away and breaks up with Michael and is with AJ. Like, there's an investment that gets revisited and validated maybe within these season finales. And I think it's a very important thing to see how the show kind of reemphasizes that again and again and again, because in the later seasons, maybe they don't have that. It doesn't have the same impact. Maybe I mean, Dwight and Angela, I think it does, but and then there's something else that we haven't talked about with like the new manager. Like, there's a sort of existential question about The Office, but it is like, the season finales are a way that kind of shows us why we watch kind of TV in general, but also why we are invested in this particular show, because we love these characters. We want to know what happens for them.
Yeah, that's a good point. There are a few times where like the there's a romantic cliffhanger, but there's also sort of a work related cliffhanger where, you know, at the end of the job, you get Ryan accepting the job from David Wallace to take Jan's position. So it's like, that's a fun, like, oh wow, that's going to be interesting in season four when Ryan becomes Michael's boss. And then of course, Search Committee, which I don't even know if Search Committee really has a romantic cliffhanger outside. Like, I think the big one is who is going to be the manager in season 8.
His presence there sort of makes everything sexual, but
yeah. Not necessarily romantic, but
not romantic, more of the Eros type of love,
but... animalistic.
If he's there, it's romantic, okay?
When's the last time you lived so intensely that your brain literally couldn't hold the memories in?
Well, you know, there's something funny in Search Committee. That's the episode where Aaron wants to date Andy.
Yeah.
And yeah, I guess.
You know?
Right.
So, like, it's... And in that regard, like some of these episodes as well, they don't always have to be cliffhangers. Sometimes you get resolutions or continuations of certain dynamics that we've seen before. So much of season 7 is like Aaron is with Gabe, you know, but like we feel like she should be with Andy. And then at the end, it doesn't work out that way. Or like he rejects her. It's just these episodes can bring so many of these kinds of things to a head. Like, yes, the sort of cliffhanger or the... maybe you can call a resolution if you want to the job is Jim asking Pam out. But another resolution that kind of happens is Jim and Karen to some extent. Like Karen says to Jim, there's one too many people in Scranton.
Yeah.
And at the end, it's like Karen is the one who ends up leaving. So like these things don't always end in cliffhangers, but they can also be a way to kind of resolve or address this tension. Maybe one other example that comes to mind is Company Picnic. So I was thinking about this a lot. This is one of my favorite season finales, and it's in part because season 5 is the weight loss episode. It's the Michael Scott podcast company, or oh my god, Michael Scott paper company. paper company arc. There's the Prince family paper thing where Michael has to go out and take out this rival business. There's the golden ticket idea thing, and Charles Minor, and by the end, they're playing this volleyball game. And they're thinking about whether or not they forfeit because of the Buffalo branch getting closed. And they're all sitting on these bleachers. And it's like Meredith and Dwight and Oscar. And they say, like, we can't forfeit. And he says, why? And Dwight says, because then the other team wins. And I think Oscar says, corporate deserves to get their ass kicked.
Mm-hmm. So right, yeah.
There's like an element of like this coming to the head, like the Dunder Mifflin branch going up against corporate, which I really, really love in that episode. They get to take out their stress on corporate via volleyball.
And maybe even specifically Charles Minor and, and David Wallace. Yeah.
Been awake for a long time.
I mean, certainly the big cliffhanger in that episode is the pregnancy that we get at the end.
But that's why I think that episode is so like deftly done, is that it builds to this sort of like corporate versus Dunder Mifflin Scranton confrontation. And then by the end, it's like, who cares? Jim says, send in the subs. You know, like this is so much bigger.
Right.
in terms of their life.
Yeah.
And that's why I really, really like that episode a lot.
I mean, a lot of these are very hard things to write. There's so many moving pieces going on. But this is where The Office, like, its strength is there's so many, the ensemble approach to it, you know, compare this to a show like, I don't know, Friends or Seinfeld or, like, sitcoms that just have smaller casts where it's like, okay, they've all dated each other and now you're in season three. It's like, now what? Like, this has a well that can keep drawing from over and over again with this ensemble. And yeah, by the end, they're grasping a bit. It's like, how about Angela and the senator? How about Robert and anyone that's moving? You know, like, they find other ways to explore. And like, season seven's weird because it feels like Goodbye Michael is the season finale, but it's not. Like, that's why the search committee feels different than all the others, I think, because it's sort of in this limbo.
It even comes after all the stuff with
Will Ferrell.
Yeah, it's like
What's the you know, and that one, like, you could argue that was the most important finale, because you're like, hey, we want people to watch season eight. We need something to, like, bring them to that. I can't say that they really succeeded in that. When I watch Search Committee again, it's not like I'm like dying for season five. It's more just like, who's going to be manager? I just want to know that. And I guess they do that okay. But I don't know. I think that one is one of the weaker ones out of the list.
I would say that's one that less of a value judgment about being strong or weak. I appreciate that it's very unique. Like, that is really, really one of a kind. And I do appreciate it for that. I think, there's something so, so different about watching, like, Ray Romano and Will Arnett and these other characters, like, kind of interview. And I think it does a really good job. This was a premise that was never really paid off. But one thing that I really liked was Dwight being upset about Robert California. And I kind of thought that alluded to a Dwight versus Robert sort of showdown in season eight that never really happened. Yeah. It's very different. And I think,
there's a parade of guest stars. There's so many big names. Yeah. Jim Carrey's there. It's like Ricky Gervais is there.
The other thing about this particular episode is this is maybe one of the most episodes that would have been different to watch in real time versus streaming. Because if you come to it as streaming and it's the end of season seven, you know that there are two more seasons after this. In the moment, we had no idea.
Right.
Like, we assumed The Office would continue because The Office was so successful. But, like, it was so unclear about what was going to happen with the show after Steve Carell left that this episode felt like there was so much at stake.
Yeah.
Big time. Yeah. Yeah. The romantic stuff kind of falls by the wayside. I mean, like Andy and Aaron seems to be the one that's kind of brought up in search committee. And even that, you see Andy sort of reject Aaron. So there's no, like,
right,
cliffhanger, really. There's also
Oscar and the senator and Angela.
That too.
But I see what you mean, Sean.
Angela's,
like, they create space where you could sever the show there, where it's like, you're not waiting on a relationship to result.
I see.
Really? Like, you, yeah, right. Like, there's a clean break there if needed.
It's as if they set things up that could have been, like, big cliffhangers, but then they just kind of fizzle out. Andy and Aaron, there's Phyllis and Aaron are doing the DNA test to see if Phyllis might be Aaron's mom. It's like, that's resolved by the end of that episode. It's not her. And then
Meredith wants
a smart,
professional, decisive, well-hung man in his 40s. Will she get it? We don't know.
I guess that is the big one. And then the other thing is, like you said, Angela gets proposed to by the senator. And even in this episode, everyone is debating whether or not to tell her that they think Robert is gay, especially when Angela is kind of, you know, mean to Pam. You know, sort of dissing her wedding. Pam.
Why does this always happen to me?
Yeah, I don't even know which thread to follow.
A fan of elegant weddings.
Yeah.
I mean, it's fun. It's interesting. We've gravitated to search committee a little bit more than the others at this point, because it sort of is like where The Office had to decide what it was. It was sort of forced to look in the mirror, like, hey, what are you without Steve Carell?
And it has to wrestle with those things. But it's a good example of like each season finale has its own duty within that season, right? And season seven is by far the most complex dynamic season because you have so many people coming in and out. I mean, Will Ferrell, like, it's crazy that his whole storyline has happened before Search Committee too. Like
before this,
In baseball terms, like Will Ferrell comes in as like the closer, which is like, hey, we need a veteran, we need a guy who can just come in and get this done and just give us a big flashbang at the end of the season. Mm-hmm. And will we disappear in the smoke after that? Maybe. But it's just funny that like, this one has kind of the biggest job, but also the stakes. I don't know. The stakes are super, super high, but it also has the least amount of ingredients. I would say raw ingredients to work with. That's a tough one.
Yeah. I mean, I think besides, you know, Search Committee, you think about, you know, them filling the manager position and all these guest appearances and stuff like that and what's going to happen leading into season eight. But I think another thing, purpose that Search Committee serves is to sort of like put in a lot of ways, they kind of put the ensemble on display a little bit mm-hmm. and sort of remind the audience like, hey, we don't like. Yeah, Steve Carell was the backbone of the show, but like there's a lot of funny stuff here, right? Yeah. You get like Dwight's kind of featured with his whole Jacques Souvenir thing. You get the drama between like Gabe and Andy, and Kelly even gets involved in that. And I think that's another thing that they really had to do was remind people that the show can be funny without Michael.
Mm-hmm. I mean, and then so much of season seven is very Michael centric. So it's kind of nice to reflect that focus or shift that focus a little bit to the other characters.
And of course, D'Angelo kind of took a lot of that, took up a lot of the stage as well when he was around. So it was kind of important to give those.
You know, these season finales, they have to end in a dramatic way. It doesn't have to necessarily be a cliffhanger per se. I mean, I think we've kind of found instances where they're not true cliffhangers, maybe.
Sure.
My favorite sort of cliffhanger moment is not in from season seven, is not in the season finale, but it's in it's when Dwight turns to Jim and goes, "Uh-oh." And I think it's at the end of Goodbye Michael. Yeah.
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 Because he doesn't show up to the party and D'Angelo starts doing that stuff with the cake.
Yeah, that's right.
What am I doing? I had cake for lunch. And he just turns and "Uh-oh."
And that's very much to the audience, like, oh boy, here,
yeah. Michael's gone now. There's no counterbalancing force, right. You know, like,
thought you were safe. What do you guys say we take a quick break and then maybe talk about more of the 1 through 5, the Michael Scott era, and then get to some voicemails?
What say we do? This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. I don't know about you, but the end of the year can be a tough time for me. The cold, dark weather has me cooped up inside all day, which can get me down. Then the added anxiety of so many family gatherings and the gift shopping. Ugh, it's enough to make a person go loco. This time of year can be a lot, and it's natural to feel some sadness or anxiety about it. But adding something new and positive to your life can counteract some of those feelings. Therapy can be a bright spot amid all the stress and change. Something to look forward to make you feel grounded, and to give you the tools to manage everything going on. I personally always talk about my feelings with friend of the pod, Colin, who is not a licensed therapist. And instead of teaching me coping skills and about how to set boundaries, he just teaches me to embrace and nourish my anger and then unleash it at the Christmas dinner table when my mom asks me, "Isn't your beard getting a bit long?" Needless to say, it never ends well. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Find your bright spot this season with BetterHelp. BetterHelp.com/Scott today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P. .com/Scott.
All right, welcome back to the show. So we spent a good amount of time on how did they do the season finales after Michael Scott. But before we do our conference room stuff, let's talk a little bit about in 1 through 5. I mean, we've obviously done a whole episode about Casino Night before. We've done one about The Job. I would say those two feel like maybe the are those two the biggest deal? Are those like one and two power rankings season finales? What would you guys say?
Deal.
I've been watching Deal or No Deal, by the way. So I'm in.
That's right. I mean, Casino Night feels like the big one. I mean, because number one, you get, you know, I mean, Jim and Pam kissing is just like was huge. And then
probably the highest watermark in the entire show of just terms of like drama feelings. It's got to be Casino Night.
Well, you're talking about watermarks. You have to talk about the obscene cartoon that went on all that paper.
I deserve that.
But of course, it's also worth mentioning that Michael does have a sort of a romantic cliffhanger with this episode too, which is he's you know, got two queens on Casino Night. He's trying to make up his mind between Jan and Carol, who for some reason both want him, if not just to compete with each other, I think is.
He has this animal magnetism.
Yo soy can con.
I mean, it's funny, and not to zoom out again, but if you watch the season finales, in a way, you can kind of watch the whole series. Like, it really, really tells the story of The Office in these, like, really big watershed moments. And yeah. I think 2 and 3 are by far, like, the ones that stand out the most. I mean, that's, like, when Jim kind of makes the move, or, like, that's, like, the – we see them finally come together, I guess. And then in the job – we finally see Jim ask Pam out, and it seems like they're finally going to be able to be together. And those are the two moments that I think like really stand out as like these like sort of peak moments when in the drama and the tension and the resolution that comes from these moments, these episodes, it all happens there.
Right. So it's almost like the job of the job or of Casino Night. It's a little easier in a weird way than these other seasons we're talking about, because they have they really have an ace to play there, where they're like, we got a Jim and Pam kiss, we have Jim asking Pam out. Those are like your biggest, you know, bullets in the chamber, so to speak, emotionally, guys.
Really, like, even though like Company Picnic ends with like the pregnancy, it's like that's exciting news and everything, but it's like, I mean, just, you know, the payoff of them having a baby, it's not like the baby comes into work in the office and becomes a character. You know what I mean? It's like, it doesn't really,
I'm a baby.
Like, it doesn't totally change much in the show other than just making Jim and Pam parents now.
Well, yes. Okay. If a baby were a worker, there would be no sales. There would be no calls. There would be no office, and things could get terrible. It's probably better as a screenplay.
Wait, I do have a baby.
I don't know why babies need to stare at me.
Thank you, baby. Thank you a lot.
I don't know if anyone has nailed a sound effect better than Stanley hitting that horse sound. Right there. One more time. Yeah. I mean, come on. This is.
I don't know why babies need to stare at me.
It is on the money.
Is that a deleted scene? I don't actually remember that.
No, I don't think so.
No, I don't know.
Later.
I know what you mean, though. That, like, these moments are important and significant, and they feel dramatic because we care about these characters so much. But like, the thing that hooks you in the office is Jim and Pam.
Yeah,
and
totally.
I think the thing that keeps us, like, that feels the most dramatic and the most satisfactory, I guess, to watch, like, build up and pay off, and like, it's a roller coaster, you know, there's like tension, right. tension and release, and it's kind of like the roller coaster hits its highest point at the end of season 3, and then there's more to the ride, but it's not the same as the first big drop.
No, because that's like Jim and Pam are like, their story is the sort of beating heart you want, and then like Michael's there for your eyes, like he's just there to like, I just want to watch this thing happen with Michael because it's hilarious. And then you have Dwight and Angela kind of in your brain, I guess, those three types of relationships, and they mix and match throughout it. But I mean, it's those two, Casino Night, Job, even Goodbye Toby, like, still is ringing out
like the last drops of the Jim and Pam drama with like, is he going to ask Pam to marry him? They even get one more season finale out of those two, I would say. And obviously the fifth one with the baby, but like that's more a continuation where this is like the last in Goodbye Toby where they're like, is it, will they?
Yeah. Yeah.
Really, guys, you're going to bring it down to the proposal. And I mean, Andy cutting in line there is just the perfect way that that happens with the new character. And the way it goes down is just so funny. Like how physically close we've talked about Ed Helms gets to John Krasinski.
Oh, yeah.
Like, when you get married. And he's just like, ugh. Like, it's just very, very well done.
Of course, we also get two at the end of that. You know, Dwight and Angela are still sleeping together. So that's kind of like a fun, you know, it's like a reminder going into season five, like this is not resolved.
Right.
Like
more to come.
Yeah. This is
a little close to my engagement
more.
There, Tuna. What's your game here?
To get married.
Do you guys have a favorite of these finales if you had to pick one?
I was going to say, do we need to rank these? What is it about our modern culture that, We have to rank things. I don't know, but we could each at least pick a favorite.
That's better.
How about a rose and a thorn? Let's do our favorite and our least favorite.
Okay, I'll go first. I'll pick Casino Night as my rose. I think once again, there's just no moment as dramatic, as explosive as Jim and Pam kissing.
You're right.
After all this, it's like Pam is still with Roy. I mean, it's just like, oh no, what is going on? How is this gonna? Like, I have to tune in for season three to find out what happens. I don't think that there's a moment that even comes close to that. It was also just like it has like finale vibes. Like it's Casino Night. It's there's a big party. There's like, you know, I mean, I guess you
time
see
to spin
that
the chamber, Boris.
just going for that one. But not anymore.
Yeah. You know, Chip I guess
leader
I mean,
and winner.
I mean, Goodbye Toby ends with a big party. Company Picnic is a big party.
I mean, a lot of these are based around some kind of event. I guess
big event.
Four of them are. I don't know if you count a portrait studio as one, but.
And I'll say my thorn is probably Free Family Portrait Studio. Like, I thinking of that episode, it, just like you were saying with Whistleblower, like it just doesn't even register as a finale episode. Yeah, that's really all I got to say about that. How about you guys?
That's all I have to say on the matter.
I know, yeah.
I don't like it.
You got to throw your cup in the garbage.
Eyes,
yeah.
Yeah, it's like, yeah. I'm with you, Sean. I think Free Family Portrait Studio is probably the weakest link out of these. I think Whistleblower is kind of a close second there. Just because, Whistleblower's got, it doesn't feel quite as earned, some of the drama there with sort of this like corporate malfeasance going on. Like, I don't really care about that much. I don't care that Dunder Mifflin is actually in trouble, that there's the stakes of that feel so much less than the other season finales. So I'll go with Whistleblower. And for me, my favorite is The Job. Give me That Job. Just cause it's like Casino Night's obviously, I think probably, yeah, you're right. The highest emotional payoff. But The Job, there's something about it. The scene when Jim comes back and asks Pam, to me, hits about as hard as the kiss. And something that I've been thinking about with why I like The Job so much is Casino Night is it's Jim really making a move. Like, it's Jim being like, and it's funny they do it at Casino Night where he's like, I'm pushing my chips. I'm all in. Pushing my chips. I'm making the bet that she's going to choose me. She doesn't. Mm. In The Job, like that's how Jim approaches it, is almost as a gamble, as he's like playing cards. In The Job, Pam kind of does the same thing, but in her own way, which is which is sending that letter and like having the yogurt lid and the metal in there. Like that is such Pam's way of just like, I'm still here. And it's a much less overt move, like moving in for a kiss. It is not that, but it is probably a lot more effective.
Yeah.
And it causes Jim to come back and do that. And I just love sort of the bookend there of like two is Jim takes his shot. Three is Pam takes her shot. And I love the resolution. I love the way the pace of it. And then the fact that they give you that extra little bit about Ryan getting the job, because that again, structurally, I'm like, I got so excited for season four because you're like, oh my God, Michael now works for Ryan. This is amazing. So structurally, I love it. Romantically, I love it. The storytelling's great. You know, it's a goodbye to some characters from season three. Perfect for me.
There's also an element, I think, of like, you know, I just thought of this when you mentioned all in, like Jim was going to go all in, right?
Yeah.
And I thought you did a really good job of like, it's like the two gambles. The other thing that is kind of at stake is that it seems like everything else in Jim's life is going all in on him moving to New York. It seems like the company's going there. Karen is going to move with him. Like his life seems to be moving in this one way. But then like that one gamble from Pam, I think is, it's like, it's really beautiful in that way that like, that he abandons it to some extent, or he decides to leave it all behind, which is which is great. No, I mean, I would agree that like those two episodes are like the heart and soul strongest, most, you know, effective episode. So I would give you that for sure. And just because you've already described them, and I think maybe explained them so well, I will just say that in rewatching these episodes, I had such a good time watching Whistleblower. Oh my God, Company Picnic.
Yeah, Company Picnic. Awesome.
Company Picnic. I had such a good time watching that episode. And I think maybe it's because, I mean, everyone watches The Office a little differently now, especially this point in our watching experiences. And so often the show is on in the background, or I'm like watching it while I'm like cooking dinner or something, or falling asleep. And so like I'm watching kind of intently, but not at certain moments, but really sitting down to watch that episode. I laughed at so many little moments that I'd kind of forgotten about or not thought about. So Dwight is stalling for Jim and Pam to go to the hospital. And I had forgotten that he and Rolf are playing that game where you try to slap the other person's hands as like part of the distraction. It's just the little things like that that really, really made me laugh. And Company Picnic was just so much fun to watch. I don't know why it always makes me laugh when Holly puts the microphone into Michael's armpit. How did you know that? Like it's just like a very funny prop choice. Like it just so much of that made me laugh and made me happy that episode. I'll just pick that one as my rose. Just because it's like, you know, it's funny, we spend so much time with the show, and then to have an opportunity or a moment, sometimes it's a blooper, deleted scene, super fan cut, whatever, but when you can just get that little hit again of like, oh, right, this show just kind of hits, it's really nice to get. I think for my thorn, I would echo maybe you, Sean, for Free Family Portrait Studio. There's a lot from that episode that I really like. I think it's really funny when Jim is super scared of the lights and you get to see the pictures they take. I love Operation Phoenix. It's one of my favorite things. This megaphone expresses how much I love you. Like there are moments that I really love. Yeah, like that I really, really appreciate. But the thing that makes it really difficult is Andy is the janitor, where he's drunk and he's not, and like they have to calibrate, like it just, it's too uncomfortable, but then like he comes out in the suit and he just wants the one, like he wants the one delicious moment. That one makes it hard to, like if you put that episode up against The Job or up against Casino Night, it's just like a very difficult comparison to make, you know?
Yeah.
It's a good point worth making too. Like Free Family Portrait Studio, like I know we hate on season 8 and 9. Like I actually like that's a really funny episode. I really like that episode. But in terms of a finale, it doesn't give you much.
We do hate on the seasons now. I think we've come to a respectful understanding of each other, and I think we treat it as such.
I don't know if I see your guys' opinions that way.
Yeah, I want to echo you too on Company Picnic. It is a really, really strong finale. I mean, I forgot the fact that like just getting Amy Ryan and Steve Carell do like torturing each other from Slumdog Millionaire is incredible.
the suicide question. I mean, there's so many things in there. But having Michael's emotional resolution is such a strong card left to play in the game, of just him getting over himself, of being like, no, I can wait, and I don't need immediate gratification, which is the only thing Michael Scott has ever cared about.
I'm really glad you brought up this moment, because this is something I was thinking about a little earlier in the show, but that previous moment passed. You were talking about how difficult it is to write these episodes. Yeah. And there are two sort of instances. One is more important or more significant than the other, that came up to that I saw as moments that were exceptionally well written, or maybe moments that were revisited in a very funny way. This one that you talked about, I think, is a great example. Where Michael talks about ours being a long story. Maybe I'll be with someone and she'll be with someone. And that comes true. So, mm-hmm. You know, Holly is with AJ and Michael is with Helene. Like these things happen in between, or Michael is with Donna. These things happen in between them coming back together. And as a viewer, you almost kind of forget that Michael and Holly will come back together, or you don't know they're going to come back together. And the show does a good job of like maybe pointing to where it's going to hit the home run mm-hmm. in that moment where Michael says that sentence, you know. Right. The other one that I thought was well written and is much less significant is when Jan in Goodbye Toby is talking to Michael about the clinic that she went to for her baby, and how it's by that place with the breakfast place you love where you can draw on the tables. Michael says IHOP, and Jan looks in the camera and goes, yeah, IHOP. But it just made me realize that in Baby Shower, but in Baby Shower, Jan talks about it being a very selective location, and Kevin goes, yeah, by the IHOP.
It's great.
Yeah,
I mean, here's how I would put a bow on sort of all these episodes, is that they are all focused at the end of the day on a relationship resolving, or blossoming, starting, ending, whatever. And all of this points to the point of like, why do we watch TV? Why do we watch shows? Why do we need to tell stories to each other? And it's to reassure, I think it's like the show is concerned with those things because it's very reassuring to know that, like, look, we all want the same things. We all want to be with someone that loves us, that we love. We all want to have those people in our lives, and we want to be okay. We want to be content. And like, all of these finales are wrestling with like, are you going to be okay? Are you going to be, you're not going to be alone. You're going to be okay. It's going to be fine. Like, that's sort of where the whole show leads, and where all these season finales are wrestling with, are the drama comes from, will that happen or not? And by the finale, by the end of the show, I mean, this is a primetime network comedy, so of course everything works out well. Is that real life? Right. Not at all. But that's why we watch these stories, is to watch.
Yeah, you're alone in real life.
I know. It's like, well, we have this though. We've got this. And no one's alone. And like, that's right. That's another part of the show. It's like, that's even if you think you are, you're not. Because there's people like you. There's other people that like are all invested in the same things. And so, and that's why like even this podcast has been so great, getting messages from people where it's like, hey, you're a weird office freak. We all are. Look, hey, let's have a Discord. We can hang out together. Hey, no one's weird here. You know what I mean? Like, this is, that's sort of that's the point, right? The beauty of ordinary things.
Yeah.
Flicking a bug off my wiener.
Sorry, I just need to cut the tension there. Weird pause.
No, man, you said it very well. I thought I think there's nothing to add from me. I thought you did a great job of summing it up.
For real, yeah. So you know what? I think in that case, I think that sort of wraps up our season finales episode. But if you have any thoughts on it, email us at mspodcastcompany@gmail.com. In the meantime, let's head to the conference room.
Okay, everybody, listen up. If you are not in that conference room in 2 minutes, I am going to kill you.
All right, so now that we've got Edwin back with us this week, last week we did a voicemail episode. Edwin
Boy, did you.
Yeah, so I think first, how about we start with Edwin? You said that you had some, you wanted to respond to the episode. You had some thoughts, yes. Follow-up thoughts.
Well, yeah, it was just very well. First of all, great job, guys. Appreciate you holding it down. I really had a good time listening to your episode. I had a few thoughts that were that I need to grab, put right in front of me here. My first reaction I thought was really funny and very kind was you said in the first answer that you're like, you're almost like you were leaving space for Edwin to answer, which I thought was very sweet because I do the opposite. I interrupt way too often to make jokes, or worse, I think of a joke and the conversation moves way past it and I feel like I have to say it anyway, usually to Alex's chagrin, and it brings everything to a dead halt. So that was very kind of you to talk about leaving pauses for me because God knows I don't do enough of that for you guys.
Yeah. It's just muscle memory.
Yeah, well, I left a pause for you. I left an empty seat at our dinner table every night. Mm-hmm.
Well, I burn two candles for you guys every evening, and then I go out to the window and and look out at the ocean and cry a single tear. But I'm glad we're back together again.
But no one's alone.
Me too.
No one's alone.
Yeah, I also thought it was really funny. Well, other thoughts, random responses. Huge shout out to Erica who called and left the message. I don't know if you guys know Erica, but she's a great friend of the pod. So great to hear her voicemail. Thought it was really funny that you guys got this voicemail about doing a draft of season 8 and 9, and you guys were like, maybe here are things that we like and don't like. And I was listening to myself and I was like, you schmohawks, this is such a good idea. We should save it and use it as an episode. What are you doing getting into it right now?
Oh, you mean we kind of just ended up doing it and not, yeah.
Well, you guys just ended up talking about it for a little while instead of saving what could have been a great episode. We should still do a draft.
We could still
do
it. We'll still do it. I don't feel like we spent that topic. You're referring to drafting things we actually like from seasons 8 and 9. Is that that was the voicemail, right?
Yeah. I also really
more important is your use of the word. I believe you just called us schmohawks.
Yeah.
What is that?
I was trying to think of a word in my head to connote this. And basically, the right word is schmohawk, which is from Curb. And it's the word that Larry's dad uses for bad drivers. Schmohawk.
All right. Well, we didn't drive that question well. So that's fair.
That's why I thought it was the perfect, like, it's just the schmohawk. You're all over the road.
That's good. Well, you know, look, you left, you gave us the keys to the car and left. So what do you expect?
That's true. It's on me. Yeah.
Yeah. Anything else before we clean up the voicemails for you?
I have something. Yes. And okay, I have not told you about this.
I have not seen this.
I was on the plane and I wrote some roast jokes and about you guys. And if they're too mean, if you don't like them, we should cut them. But I will read them to you if you like.
There's no, zero chance I'm cutting these.
Yeah, if you make us cry, that's definitely staying in the episode.
Yes.
Okay, it's not a lot, but it's just a couple things. Okay. Thank you for attending Sean and Alex's episode brought to you by Rogaine, a.k.a. the Joe Rogaine Experience. It's the only show that goes from 0 to 100 MPH as long as MPH is male pattern hair loss.
Edwin, as he
you're
read
right.
That,
too mean, too mean.
Know,
cut it.
As he read that, Edwin ran his fingers through his luscious hair.
His thick Chicano hair.
I wrote this new segment idea for you guys. It'll all be golf / the Finer Swings Club.
Yeah, I love it.
I have a tagline here. Self-explanatory, totally unbearable.
That's some
skip. and then I wrote this. Okay, this is a lot less concise. It says, these two think they can do a show without me. They must not realize how this thing works, how the bread is buttered. Who do they think they are? They're just the producer of the podcast and the person with TV and film production experience who facilitates and introduces and closes the show. I honestly don't know how they're going to do it without the nerd who corrects quotes and makes jokes. And then
that was the episode. It's like it was a ship without a captain. It was like, all right, we got the engine working, we got the boat is decked out, it's designed, we know how it works, and no one's here to make sure it
goes well.
And then the last thing I have is a special thanks to Ryan Lloyd, who does all of our artwork. The biggest roast of all three of us is how often Ryan declines to be on the show. At every turn, she has better things to do.
You know, that's a great last one, because that gets us to the voicemails. We had several voicemails that were just being like, can we get some more Ryan on the show, please? People really liked her. And let her know that. I believe Thaddeus called, and that's all he said. Okay. Hmm.
Okay. All right.
All right. That means
I'll let her know.
Should. So Ryan, stop being not on the show, because
she doesn't listen. Okay. It's no.
Well, I'll just text her.
She can't listen to this crap. Yeah.
I'll just text
her. We're lonely. We need a new Ryan.
We are.
She hears one third of this podcast through the floorboards every once a week. So
everybody dance now.
Yeah,
I hear it too, boss.
She starts tapping her.
That's
foot.
What Yumi says. Yeah, I hear it too, boss.
All right. All right. Let's go to these. We set aside a few voicemails, being like, hey, let's wait till Edwin's here. Again, this is from last week. So we'll start here with a new listener who did not leave a name or where they're from.
Relatively new listener, but I've been binging the podcast. Some things that I love about the podcast, when Edwin just says at random, Harry and the Hendersons. When Alex plays the drop of Bob Vance bidding 1,000, and like Sean, I like the darker episodes of The Office.
Nice.
That's it. That's the voicemail. That's great. Cryptic. Don't know who it was from. Little quick hitter to all of us, and shout out to Edwin for Harry
and the Hendersons.
There you go. There it is. You do use that very well.
Yeah.
It's the perfect thing to yell, because it's what, like, Andy is just not involved in the conversation at all.
He's got the headphones on.
Yeah. The first time, you know what the first time I did it? Or I think the first time I did it, Sean said something like, carrying the load. And it just made me think of it.
You know, shout it from the rooftops. You know, whatever, anything vaguely reminds you of saying that, please do. Okay, let's go back. This one's from October from our guy AJ. Let's see, where is this? There it is.
AJ.
This is one AJ, our resident tennis fan alongside Edwin here.
Hell yeah.
Called in.
Bro, those sorts.
Shanola. Miss you, kiddo. Miss you so much. Hey, guys. This is AJ, resident tennis fan of the MSPC. Edwin, just wanted to call and let you know that after doing that tennis racket demo program, I got the Wilson Blade, and I got two of them. So, bro, I got swords.
Hey.
Love you guys. Thanks. Bye.
Nice.
Yeah.
Shout out to the Wilson Blade, a fine tennis racket.
Yeah. So I don't know if tennis time, if anything you want to update us. How's your tennis game, Edwin? I know
it's
you've been playing a lot.
It's been rusty because I've been gone. I was gone last week, and then I was also gone for a week and a half in November. So I was back in Portland. We did a couple things. So I had to miss some of my regularly scheduled training. So it's been a little bit coming back in and out. I felt like I was in a really good rhythm. I was training a lot up until October, but we'll see. I'm going to try to hit some more when we're in Portland, but you gotta stay at it. You got to make it a habit to really get the most out of it. And that's when you play the best, you feel the best. And that concludes this episode of the Finer Swings Club.
Hey, nice.
Still counts. Yeah, let's talk about just sports you usually see older people playing. Golf and tennis. Welcome.
Hey, we got sports games again.
The Finer Swings Club. That's a perfect segment. Nicely done there.
Yeah.
But thank you, AJ. I always appreciate you asking about tennis, man, because it gives me a reason to talk about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Let's go to this voicemail from Trista, who called in with a real life office moment.
Hello and welcome to the Michael Scott Office Podcast Company voicemail, a voice recording for fans of The Office by fan of The Office. I'm your caller, and I'm basically a banking wizard, Trista Ware, calling from the Bender Mifflin branch of Chandler, Arizona. So I just listened to your guy's voicemail episode where the kid gave his teacher a note, and it made me think of my office work story. We have these cash bags, and they have locks on them, and I have a master key, and then the person who picked up the cash has another key. And when that person left their position, they gave me their key. And so our director set up a meeting with me, and she told me that she needed to get the keys for me because, or at least one of the keys for me, because if something happened to me, then there would be no way for them to access the cash. And I said, without missing a beat, if I'm dead, you guys have been dead for weeks. And she actually busted up laughing. She watched The Office and knew what I was talking about. So it just made it that much better. Actually, with all the times that I quote The Office, this is the only time that it's really worked perfectly, unless it's like my best friend who watches every other second. But yeah, so I just thought that was pretty funny. It was fun. But yeah, to stay close to my 90 seconds, I'll say bye. Thanks for all you guys, for all you guys do. Talk to you later.
Thanks, Trista.
Amazing. And great intro.
Incredible intro.
Yep.
Yeah.
Very well done. I like this because a lot of the real life office stories we get are, it's mainly stories when you reference or quote The Office and just no one, it's just crickets. Mm-hmm. People look at you weird. I like this one because this does sound like the perfect hit. Like if you've risked one with a stranger and just said it and they don't know, it's bad. But when it hits like this, this sounds like one of the better hits I've heard of. If I'm dead, you've been dead for weeks.
You've all been dead for weeks. It's good too because, I mean, it's good too because it's like, it is like kind of a high stakes moment. Like this is real. Like they have these bags of money. Like it's very important that trusted people have the key. Like she has both keys. Like it is extremely important. Like, and it needs to be like discussed seriously. Like, you know, there needs to be like a formal request, like give me the key.
Yeah.
Just in case something happens to you. If I'm dead, you all have been dead for weeks.
But like you get the wrong like director of a bank and you say that to them without any context, they'd be like, is that a threat? Like,
yeah,
it could become like a workplace, like a serious
They're
issue.
Like, okay, Trista.
Can we talk about your comment you made to the director yesterday? Yeah. Like, yeah, HR calls you, like, yeah.
Anyway. Yeah. I will say that listening and knowing that it was going to be an office moment, I thought of different ways it could go. Like, at first, when she talked about cash bag, I thought, like, yes, cash baskets. And then when she talked about there being two keys, I thought about
then I'll have two keys.
Yeah, only one to go. But then also and if anyone here has seen a small brass key.
Brass key.
Like it's very funny, like trying to anticipate which way it was gonna go. So that was very I enjoyed that quite a bit.
Good one.
All right. Well, thank you, Trista, for that. Those are the voicemails we had, y'all.
Thank you to everybody who called in and left us a message. Thanks to Edwin for coming back to the show.
You're welcome. it was the least
if you
want to
call
do.
Us, if you want to call us and leave us a message, it's 503-694-9314. We'd love to play them on the show. You can email us at mspodcastcompany@gmail.com. We have our store up, mspcstore.com. I believe that you can order things until the 9th and they should show up in time for the holidays, for Christmas and all that. So December 9th is your final chance to order before Christmas.
That's 2 days from now.
Join our Discord and join our Patreon, patreon.com/Michael Scott. $5 a month gets you Scott's Tots access to our ad-free main feed episodes and mailbag episodes every month.
First two episodes of our new podcast are on there.
Yeah, so in a little about that, we are going to be, the plan is to launch a new show called Captive Audience by the end of this month. I think, should we tell them what we're watching first so they have time to, to give it a watch themselves?
Yeah.
So for, to launch the show, right, it'll come out before Christmas. We decided to launch with a Christmas movie, and, Alex is, bringing Love Actually, which Edwin has never seen.
Yes, we wanted to hit start with a big one. And initially, we had some other movies that we will do after that that you will hear about, of some kind of major movies that are missing from our respective canons. But this one, Christmas, let's go with the big, let's go with the whale here. It's got to be Love Actually. So if and I'm guessing a lot of listeners, you've probably seen that. If you haven't, great chance here in the next couple weeks. Knock that out. Mm-hmm. Get some family together. Mm-hmm. Watch it or refresh yourself if it's been a while, and join us for the series premiere of Captive Audience coming this month. Watch Love Actually. I don't know. I should probably look up where it's streaming because I haven't, but we can add that information.
Yeah, it's gotta be somewhere. But yeah, special thanks to our Scott's Tots for supporting the show. Special thanks to Kayla and Brianna, who run our Discord. Special thanks to Ryan Lloyd, who designs our artwork.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Love Actually is on Netflix, by the way. So that's easy.
Hey. Very good. This episode was recorded on location in Portland, Oregon, USA, and Zurich, Switzerland.
Thank you for listening. Thanks for hanging out with us, for sending us voicemails, emails, questions, comments, likes, show reviews, everything you do to interact, rock with us. It helps us a lot, and it means the world to us that we get to keep doing the show. So just thank you for being a listener. Thank you for hanging with us. We truly appreciate it. Very excited for what's to come. Some Christmas episodes coming up, this new show launching. It's the most wonderful time of the year, so we hope you'll stay with us. Take care. Stay safe. See you next week.
Pippity Poppy, give me the salad.
Yes, sir.
Closing time. Every new beginning comes from some other beginning's end.
Good night.
Seeking the truth never gets old. Introducing June's Journey, the free-to-play mobile game that will immerse you in a thrilling murder mystery. Join June Parker as she uncovers hidden objects and clues to solve her sister's death in a beautifully illustrated world set in the roaring 20s. With new chapters added every week, the excitement never ends. Download June's Journey now on your Android or iOS device, or play on PC through Facebook Games.